Thanks. Good afternoon. This is the Design Commission. And I'd like to begin by introducing first the Bureau of Development Services staff who are here. They include Kara Fervante and Tim Herron.
Thank you.
Commission members, the commission members who are here today right at this moment are myself, Gwen Milius, the chair, Ted Savinar, and Jane Hansen holding down the power side of the table. Waiting for the slackers to show. Commission members are private citizens appointed by the mayor to provide review of new construction or remodeling of projects within designated design zones. We are not paid but serve entirely as volunteers. More detailed information regarding the purpose and function of the commission can be found in the Portland Zoning Code. Commission members must declare a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact prior to the staff presentation of a particular case. If a commission member has a conflict of interest or bias, they are not allowed to participate in commission discussion or voting on that project. If a commission member has had an ex parte contact, they must declare the substance of it on the record and is subject to rebuttal. Type 3. For Type 3 reviews, the following procedure is required. 1. Public testimony can only address the applicable approval criteria or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or land use regulations which the person believes apply to the decision. The applicable approval criteria are set forth in the Portland Zoning Code and are more specifically identified in the staff report. The staff will identify the applicable criteria as part of the staff report. 2. Prior to the close of this hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence or testimony. If such a request is made, the commission will grant a continuance or hold the record open to provide an opportunity to submit additional evidence and an opportunity to respond to that new evidence. 3. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. 4. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to give the commission an opportunity to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages in circuit court under Oregon Revised Statute 197.796. The commission's decision on this case is final unless appealed to the city council within 14 days of the decision. If the decision is not appealed, it must be recorded with the Multnomah County Recorder. Specific instructions will be provided with the notice of the commission's action. This hearing is recorded, and all speakers need to sit at the front table and give their name and mailing address before speaking. The following procedures will be used for each case. 1. Staff will show slides of the site and surrounding area and present a report, which will include the applicant's proposal, identify the applicable approval criteria, and include information on letters received on the request, findings, and a recommendation on the request. 2. That's a 10-minute presentation. 2. Applicant will present their report. There's a 20-minute time limit on that. 3. Public testimony will be received in favor of the proposal. I'll be imposing a 3-minute time limit today. 4. Public testimony will be received in opposition to the proposal. Again, 3-minute time limit. 5. The applicant will be given an opportunity to rebut the testimony of the opponents. 6. Public testimony will be closed. 7. If any party requests an opportunity to submit additional evidence, the record will be held open 7 days to allow time to submit additional evidence. The record will be held open an additional 7 days to allow parties to submit evidence responding to the new evidence. 8. After the record is closed to all other parties, the applicant will have an additional 7 days to submit final written arguments without additional evidence. 9. After the record is closed to all parties, commission members will discuss and vote on the request. In the case of a tie vote on any motion, that motion will fail. 10. If the commission's decision amends or overturns the Bureau of Development Services staff report, the adoption of new or revised findings will be required. At the time of its decision, the commission will announce when the revised findings will be considered. No additional testimony will be taken, but interested parties may attend. Commissioner Kaiser is here. Hello. We have our first item on the agenda today is actually items of interest. We're changing it up a little bit to try to make sure that we actually get to the items of interest before everyone's completely fried. So Tim Herron's here to interest us in something.
I have many interesting things to say.
Okay, great. So
thank you. Happy rainy Thursday. A couple things. So we're very busy, as you know. We're so busy that we need to schedule an extra hearing date in June, potentially an extra hearing date in July as well. Originally, we sent out an email polling you for some dates, and already that's proving to be outdated. What I'm asking right now, should your schedule calendars be available, at least for these four commissioners, the extra hearing dates we're looking for in June are basically the opposite Thursdays we don't already meet, which would be June 12th and June 26th. Essentially, a big driver for this is we have an exceptionally large project, the Goat Box development, which is on its own the equivalent of about 3 Type 3s. And so it will take an entire hearing really on its own to do. It also may not be done in one hearing. So what we're working on first is that first date. So this new date may or may not be for that case specifically, but we need flexibility within June to kind of either bump regularly scheduled items to the special date so we can entertain this kind of large-scale project on a regular scheduled date, or the opposite, make that large-scale project have the special hearing date. So if I could just get a poll from either of you, we're not doing both dates, but if you're available for both dates, great. We will pick one or the other based on, obviously, a quorum, and the more, the merrier, as always.
So we're just talking about June?
June 12th and June 26th.
Okay.
Are we already down for June 5th?
June 5th and June 19th are our regularly scheduled dates. And the only thing I would prompt, and I'm looking ahead at the calendar, and I am looking into July. July 3rd, which would be otherwise our regularly scheduled date, is right before a holiday weekend. And so we've already forwarded dates for that hearing. So what I was getting at with that is, if 12th is the only date, I would just point out it'll be three Thursdays in a row of very long hearings. So with your other schedules and other things to do, that may not be desirable for that reason. However, what the 26th would allow is just back-to-back Thursdays for long hearing dates. I do recall when we had a marathon session of, and I believe it was around this time last year, where we had five Thursdays in a row. And it's just not humanly possible.
And of course we have to do some juggling, but if there are some commissioners, the lady to my left has some serious scheduling problems with doing more than two hearings a month, and that's understandable. I'm sure we can keep a quorum together though. So, I'm good for either date. In June, I have issues with early August, so we'll need to talk about that. But
and I'm good for either
month. Okay.
Yeah. And right now I'm open on all of them, but I can only commit to two that month.
Okay.
I'm open on the 12th, not on the 26th. And so, are you saying there is no commission on the 3rd of July?
That's the next. Let's handle that next. I'm happy to talk about July. Commissioner Work, what we were just discussing is because of our schedule and because of a particularly large project coming in, the GoBlox project, we're looking for an extra date in June, not necessarily just for that project, but to give us flexibility with our June calendar. Yeah, but an email is unfortunately already outdated just because of some scheduling challenges with the load that's kind of coming in our office. So we're looking at June 12th. And June 26th, not both dates, but if you're available for both dates, let me know. And just looking at the math already, it may be leaning towards the 12th.
Mm-hmm. I got permits to do something.
Either date will work for you. Okay. And not the 26th, David? As much? Okay. Preferred date is the 12th. Got it. So on to July, we haven't had a chance to update you. So we typically meet the first and third Thursdays of the month. Every once in a while, like around this time, July 4th weekend falls right or around a holiday weekend. Our assumption has been in the past, a hearing right before the July 4th holiday is less attended than typical. Since you're all here, or five of you are, if that's not something that's workable, our plan would otherwise have been to shift the July dates to second and fourth Thursdays, which would make it July 10th and July 24th as the regularly scheduled hearing dates. If that presents a challenge, let me know, but we will need to have at least two hearings in July, one way or the other. We can't cancel one of the two. Okay.
Moving to the 10th.
Yeah. So that's still cool. Great, Gwen. Is that okay? And David, you're cool. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. So, unless you have any other further questions about the items of interest, which really I only briefly spoke with Gwen about it and Paige, and thought it was it would be a good opportunity to check in with all of you as you're present at the front of a hearing on any specific matters. It doesn't mean we need to not have items of interest at the end of a hearing, which we sometimes often do. But this was just a matter I wanted to bring up front. So for the calendar, we're just leaving that as the first item, and it could take 5 minutes, 2 minutes, or longer pending the schedule. Great. So without further ado, I'm happy to let Sarah Figliozzi with PBOT take the mic.
It's already been noted, but Commissioner Wark is here for the record.
Here we go. Hello. Hi. So this is the second time that I'm in front of you briefing about the street seats.
Is your mic for sure on?
I'm not sure.
Button up?
Is that working?
I think so. Yeah.
Should I put it a little bit closer?
Yeah.
Button up.
There you go.
There we go.
And closer. There you go.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure everyone hears you.
Great. So my name is Sarah Figliozzi. I'm with the Portland Bureau of Transportation in the Active Transportation Group. I'm coming in front of you for the second time briefing you on a program called Street Seats. And the point today is basically revisiting what streets are, why PBOT is offering this program, what changes have been made since we came to you last, which was essentially October 2012, and then talk to you a little bit about our design goals and give you some examples of what we've been seeing in terms of submissions. So first off, in terms of what street seats are, we piloted the program in August 2012 with three installations. It was to essentially pilot a successful parklet program, which is very active in San Francisco, as well as New York, Montreal, Long Beach, several other cities throughout the U.S. The basic concept is that PBOT is permitting installation which is removable to extend the sidewalk into the parking lane to allow outdoor cafe seating or public seating. It can include landscaping, built-in seating, removable tables, bike parking, umbrellas, sort of a number of different elements. The lengths have essentially been from 20 to 50 feet, so that's 1 to 3 parking spaces. We've seen a variety of materials proposed here in Portland as well as other cities, mostly wood decking, concrete pavers. The applications coming from applicants, they are responsible for all costs, including the cost of design, installation, construction, cost of removal, cost of maintenance. Permit fees are roughly $2,500 up to $7,000. The permits are submitted and reviewed annually. And by the end of 2013, we had 8 installations here in Portland. We just closed our application window for 2014, where we saw about 10 new applications and eight renewals. In terms of why is PBOT interested, obviously we manage the public right-of-way. We also manage the outdoor cafe seating program. We believe that the public right-of-way is a space that can be used for more than just moving people in the storage of vehicles, and that there is a role for activating the streetscape. In terms of the timeline, again, in 2012, we piloted the program. Advocacy groups had come to us in 2008 saying, look, there's this great program in San Francisco. Can we be second in line? All right, so now New York is doing it. Come on, can we at least be the third city to do this? We finally came together, put guidelines in terms of how this might be something that we could permit in 2012. In the fall, after I came to you, we tried to gather feedback from the community, both reaching out to business partners as well as the community stakeholders. What we saw was general overwhelming support, but there were also definitely some concerns about what type of aesthetic we've been seeing, parking loss, safety concerns were also raised. After taking a look at that feedback, taking a look at what you said, we revised the program and then released it as a proper program in 2013, and then revised it a little bit more, released the applications, and again, here we are with the close of the 2014 window. So I wanted to run through this. We've already talked about quite a bit here, but talk a little bit about some of the changes that we've made. First off, We did establish an application window, so we're evaluating all of the applications at the same time. That gives us a sort of a sense of comparativeness. We capped the 2014 applications. Basically, we're going to approve no more than 10 locations this year. We've increased the fee. So, for example, in 2012, a 50-foot platform, which is certainly the largest, the longest that we've had, was $984 per year. In 2014, that's close to $5,750. We've created a review committee, and that includes a BDS representative, so trying to have some sort of conduit to this group. We've established evaluation criteria. This is really to prioritize our trying to hope that we can improve the design quality that's coming in, as well as trying to prioritize those applications that are offering public seating. The application materials, we have set higher guidelines in terms of the design documentation that needs to be submitted, as well as the community support packages. It has reduced the number of applications that we received. So in 2013, we had 17 applications. This year, there's only 10. We've established an emphasis to use designers and architects. And so we have a list of those firms that are familiar with this program up on the website. Our community support packages really encourages the applicants to approach the neighborhood associations and get letters of support from their adjacent neighbors. We've submitted the designs that have been submitted to us online. So those are posted online. We have a publicized 4-week comment period. There's a greater PBOT notification as well. So we're putting posters up in the windows with instructions for comments, as well as mailing to adjacent neighbors. And finally, a higher level of notification and as well as review for those renewal applications. So trying to take a look at how well are these installations being maintained? What are the sidewalk clearances looking like? What is it looking like during the wintertime, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of the 24 application window that came in, I know I've been going between 10 and 11 new applications and 8. There's actually 7. Part of this includes a design competition that we will be holding over the summer. So most of them are restaurants and bars. We have 2 public option proposals that have been submitted. One is the existing part of the Center for Architecture design submittal, as well as another one that's from the South of Market Eco District. Mm-hmm. There are no installations allowed in the downtown core. Part of this is after the feedback that we received in 2012, there was a concern from the Downtown Retail Council in terms of installations downtown. So we still have kept that free from, we're not allowing any applications in that zone.
So is that south of Burnside?
Sorry, south of Burnside to southwest Harrison, and then between southwest 2nd and 10th.
Okay.
So that's the window. So west end does. In terms of the design guidelines, they're pretty limited. They're basically focused on safety and functionality. Though in conversations with BDS, we are looking at possibly revising these, putting some higher, harder parameters to avoid some of the creep issues that I know you guys have dealt with in terms of food carts and other things. So taking a look at those. The basic elements here is that they only extend to 6 feet. You know, they're essentially sitting in what could be auto parking. And a portion of the platform needs to be flush with a curb. Obviously, stormwater drainage needs to be unimpeded. This is some of the evaluation criteria that we've introduced this year. Again, we're really trying to prioritize and elevate those submittals that have come in with higher quality design, as well as those designs that are trying to incorporate public seating or thinking about how the space can be used outside of business hours. I also want to clarify something here, which I didn't earlier, is that unlike San Francisco and New York, Portland has allowed the option of extending an outdoor cafe seating permit onto these platforms. So in Portland, we're allowing table service here, and it's a big distinction compared to other like San Francisco. At the same time, we want these to be more than additional outdoor cafe seating. I mean, we recognize that outdoor cafe seating adds vitality to the street, But we also see the benefit of what's being done in San Francisco in terms of creating that public seating and more than just trying to maximize the number of tables and chairs. And so that we've sort of established in our evaluation criteria that we will be prioritizing those locations that, that think about public seating.
So who pays for, have you had applications for people to pay for the application and the permit and all that, but it's not revenue generating venture, it's for the public that
right. So the only one that we had in 2013 was as part of the design competition outside of the Center for Architecture. And then this round, the South of Market Eco District with PSU partnered with architecture students. And so they have a proposal outside of this building in front of the food carts. And so when I talked about the fees earlier, we also, there isn't a fee. Yeah, so we try to incentivize it by financially as well if it's just doing public seating. I think I mentioned that, so our public comment period is going to end at the end of April. We'll be reviewing the applications early May and then hope to have permits mid-June for those applications that don't need additional requirements. In terms of the program design goals, I just wanted to go through some of the issues, I would say, that the program is still dealing with. I would say that many of the submissions are still poor in terms of design quality. I think we've definitely increased the design quality this year, but that's certainly an issue that we're dealing with. I think one problem is good design costs money, and so it's one of the issues the program will have to deal with in terms of can we help with funding for designs. I'm not sure. There's some brainstorming that has to be done on that front. In terms of seasonality, should we be encouraging installations to only be installed during the summer? What are the pros and cons of those issues? Or is it a benefit to the neighborhood to allow year-round installations? We're thinking about weather protection and whether or not, again, there's a public benefit to that, or if we're going to start dealing with creep, if you will. And maintenance responsibilities, making sure that we're holding the permit holders to task in terms of their maintenance responsibilities, as well as looking at how, when we're renewing these permits, in terms of asking for repair schedules and other elements. Just a few slides in terms of some images from other cities to give a sense of the scope.
Haven't seen anything from Portland yet?
Yes. And so I have some images there.
Oh, okay, exactly. It's coming. Okay.
Exactly. These are mostly San Francisco. The one on the second row in the middle is from Seattle. You can look to see how they're dealing with the grade issues there. The basic thing that we're seeing in other cities is, and granted, I've picked out the prettier photos, but a higher aesthetic. There's definitely more creativity, more landscaping, I would say more colors, and it's certainly installations that cost more money. Here are just a few images of some of the renewal examples that were submitted. We have Portland Bottle Shop. They were installed in 2013. This is in Selwood. They have a good example of built-in seating, as well as landscaping. Oven and Shaker was one of the first three pilot installations. They actually updated their design the second year that it was installed. They only install it during the summer. Mississippi Pizza was another one of the first installations in 2012. They have an outdoor cafe seating permit that's extended onto the platform, but they do sign it as public, so they try to bridge that gap. I would say it's an example of a very basic design that they have tried to embellish with add-ons. You're missing the life-size giraffe in the photo, as well as some of the cutouts that kids like to take photos in. And then Songbird Cafe, of course, probably a photo that was done right after installation, and thus no people, no umbrellas, and so forth. Some of the new application examples, this is the South of Market Eco District. This is proposed out here on Southwest 4th, just north of Southwest College Avenue, partnership with PSU architecture students. It seems like a design that has really shown a variety of materials being proposed, interesting landscaping, forms, and how the space can be used. This is the only application that has sort of purely public that was submitted. Second one here, Lompoc Brewing, North of 23rd, and Xavier. Just landscape. I wasn't planning on going into the detail of the different applications, but just to give you sort of a brief snapshot there. And all of the designs are posted on the program website. We also ran a design competition. Well, we did not. We partnered with the Center for Architecture and the Portland Design Week. And they ran a design competition in collaboration with PBOT. There were 21 submittals in the end. One of them was built. That's the first place winner up there in the corner. And there were two runner-ups and four honorable mentions. There we go. Lift. And so that's the photo of the actual built installation. And it was placed out in front of the Center for Architecture. So it was in place on October and November. And we have plans to partner with them again this year, hopefully expand it to four built installations if we can find the funding for it. But I think this partnership here really was a great example of trying to show Portland what can be done. The emphasis here was certainly on, what is it called, CNC construction? You guys probably know about it. Is that what it is? Yeah. Typically, the installations were about $6,000 to build, and hopefully we can have that in place for a little bit longer. And that's it. So it's any questions the group may have. But otherwise, just wanted to let you know where we are in that program.
Any questions?
I have a slew of them.
Okay. Why don't we start?
I got the.
Thanks. This is great. I have a whole bunch of questions, but they don't take them as being negative. I'm totally supportive. I want to understand some stuff. You said $2,500, but it's a sliding scale. How does the fee operate?
So we have a $500 permit fee, and then, again, these are annual. And then if the location is extending an outdoor cafe seating permit, so if they want to do table service, or if they would like to get permission for OLCC to serve alcohol, then it's $105 per linear foot. And so that's why you start seeing these the gradation. So it really depends on the use, the location. And on top of that, the applicant also needs to pay the meter revenue that's being lost.
Okay.
And so this is one of the issues when PBOT is quite dependent on our meter revenue.
How are film company hoods managed?
Film?
In other words, when a company comes in to shoot, they hood all the meters in an area?
Mm-hmm. That is, I would imagine that it would be a temporary...
Do they pay a fee for that?
Yeah.
And is it beyond the meter fee?
My understanding is that they're paying for the meter. No, I think what it is that it's a set fee per day. And the idea is that set fee per day also encompasses meter loss revenue. So something like $50 per day is my understanding.
Where I'm going is it's amazing the disruption that occurs when there's just one semi parked on a block in the downtown core. It's mm-hmm. It throws everything out of whack. So I don't think three or four spaces is the same, but I'm just trying to understand how it compares. Who reviews the design that are submitted?
So this year we've created a committee. It includes mostly PBOT reps, parking, permitting folks, myself, and then also a representative from BDS.
So you have, you talk about increasing the design quality. Do you have criteria? Do you have written criteria that people respond to?
The criteria are vague. I will, I think we had them back here. But the design guidelines and then the evaluation criteria are essentially most of the guidelines that people are designing to are safety based. So they can't be placed at corners. Mm-hmm. We're concerned about slope. Making sure that stormwater drainage isn't being impeded,
mm-hmm.
and then quality and creativity of design, or the quality and durability of materials. So perhaps it's too vague. We're trying to find that balance between allowing that flexibility for creativity and design.
I totally get it. Well, it might be interesting to see if you can adopt five or six lines of criteria that actually describe what you're looking for, that have a qualitative approach,
mm-hmm.
So that a designer understands what you're looking for before they design it.
Right. I think that
would speak to the design intent that I think you're searching for, because you can say quality and creativity, but that doesn't really say the values of what you're trying to aspire to.
No, I completely agree. And I think what we've seen are applicants coming to us and saying, can you give us an example of what's been approved before in the past, which we don't have a lot. And also, I don't think we have enough images of quality designs up on the website either.
Right. Well, and I mean, maybe you've already done this, but just saying, you know, why did that design win?
Right.
You know, and why were these other ones runners up? What qualities of those designs really put them over the top?
Not the design element, but what what it feels like, what it looks like, and why that's of value. How you're actually determining your decisions when you talk about quality.
That's a great idea.
It's true, because the winner, sorry to interrupt, because the winner was actually giving the least amount of space back to the public. Is more of an art piece sitting in a parking spot. And that's one. So that might be confusing if you are going for something other than just a really sculptural element.
And if I can just clarify, the design competition was, you know, run by Design Week. And so there were submittals.
Mm-hmm.
And we had buildability issues. A lot of those designs actually didn't meet our design requirements. But it was an exercise in terms of what's possible. And then of course, there's the applications that come in that are coming from Portland restaurants, and they have a completely different goal.
Right.
And
right.
so it's hopefully trying to find something in the middle, and we're not quite there yet.
So they propose it for a specific site, and you've already, and those sites are just within neighborhoods. And so anyone in that particular area can then propose. Is there a priority given to public or versus private then?
Yes.
Out of those 10 that you're going to?
Yes. Okay. And we certainly, we've set the 10 as a cap. Mm-hmm. We only received 10.
Oh.
I think there's a number of applications that don't meet our goals, whether it be in terms of community outreach or the design.
So they may end up with less.
What would you do if four restaurants on one block decided they all wanted to apply, or two restaurants and the entire block face is great designs and wonderful and just way cool?
Right. We've received that question several times. We don't have an exact answer. What we've been saying so far is this is a program that is reacting to what the business and the neighborhood community are asking for. And so, ideally, the neighborhood and the business community would support those designs. And if it's something that there was community support for it, then PBOP would probably be likely. But I'm totally speaking in hypothetical.
I can see a restaurant on each corner and a dress shop in the middle. And the two restaurants have great designs, and they say they want to do this, and now the visibility and the parking space in front of the dress shop is eliminated.
Right.
So is there a limit of one per block or, you know, one per street edge or face or?
Yeah. And no, we have not. Okay. We've not set those.
And have you considered doing them in actually with just a non-food orientation in the downtown core? Pop-up shops or adjacent for sales or something like that?
That would be completely city-sponsored, for example?
Pardon?
That would be city-sponsored?
Yes.
Is that what you're...
Well, I mean, in other words, you're providing this to dining establishments. Mm-hmm. Have you but downtown, the downtown core is barred.
It's barred only because the Downtown Retail Council has submitted comments early on saying that they did not support it. They had a number of reasons. And so I think until that there's enough support from them, we don't want to push it.
I think
it's certainly open to nonprofits. Anyone can apply. And I think the other point that I would make is that as part of the design competition that's being done with the Center for Architecture, the hope is to have four installations. So perhaps, again, whether or not we can find funding, but whether that all be near Center for Architecture or perhaps dispersed as well, and that would allow...
Where I'm headed is they are a total wonderful amenity. They break the grid. They make people feel a little more diverse in their experience. It's way cool.
You're asking about if someone may not have a shop on that block, but they come in and open up a little.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
That's one thing. Okay. That's a subset. But where I was going is I could imagine a retailer who wants to create seating and some landscaping outside their store, which doesn't exist. Could they, not serving food, not serving alcohol, throw in some potted plants and a bench and just...
Well, I would like to just add to that because I was just in San Francisco. So I've seen a lot of these, and they are in the downtown core. And it's just funny that our downtown doesn't want them when that's one neighborhood that really needs some activation of some kind.
What's kind of funny about San Francisco, and this is sort of a pendulum swinging, I'm not saying I endorse this point of view, but San Francisco, I think 10 years ago, was busy pulling all the public benches out because they didn't, because they didn't like what was going on in their public benches. And I think one of the reasons why maybe the downtown core area is not as interested in this program is because they don't want to put a bench and some potted plants outside their shop because they're worried about
everybody's
who's going to sit on the
bench.
Everybody's
covering that up.
Right.
So, all the little nooks and crannies are getting filled in downtown because nobody wants anyone hanging out.
Right. I mean, remember the...
Yeah, the Yamhill planters.
The Yamhill planters. Thank you.
Yes.
And so just to clarify, a public seating proposal that's not coming from a restaurant or cafe would be prioritized with our current evaluation criteria. So that's what we're looking for.
Okay. Yeah, I think
just not
great.
Seeing
okay,
it.
Great.
Because that's what I was noticing, too, was in San Francisco, it was really about site furnishings, and there were hangout places. It wasn't restaurant-related, and there were people on almost everyone I saw, and people were populating them, and it was really great. They did look grimy. Even the ones that were very permanent materials looked a little on the grimy side. So I don't know what the lifespan of your typical one is.
But who, when a business builds one of these, I assume even though it's in the right of way, it's private. Is that correct? How is the policing and security? In other words, if somebody, an undesirable, whoever that might be, somebody dressed in the suit, I don't want out in front of my shop, sits down on the bench in front of my shop that I've, do I have the right to say move along?
You know, I don't know the letter to the law in terms of that.
I'm looking for ways to have more of them and have them be even greater. So that's why my last question, then I will shut up, I promise, guys. how do you measure demonstrated neighborhood support?
It's difficult. We didn't want to set absolute criteria to make it over the top difficult for the applicants, but at the same time trying to provide some sort of safety net, I guess, there for the neighborhood. What we suggested were letters from the neighborhood association and business association. Many neighborhood associations have actually decided not to say yay or nay because they heard both dissent as well as support. But simply them going to the neighborhood association and having that conversation is a great thing. And then if we don't have that, perhaps there's some mini meeting notes. There's also letters of support from adjacent neighbors. There's one application that came in from Bonfire Lounge on Southeast Stark at 28th. And they have just a stack of letters of support, and it very much, I mean, granted, there's some people who are concerned about it, but lots of their adjacent neighbors saying, I recognize that this will be removing two parking spaces, perhaps more if we add on street bike parking, but we recognize that it's adding additional foot traffic to the street. So there will be different flavors, and each neighborhood is different in terms of their level of involvement.
I just wonder if there's the opportunity for the person in between the two or next to the one to register their concern in a way that is weighed equally to the person who is trying to put it in.
It will be difficult, I think, there will certainly be letters of opposition, probably more letters of opposition than letters of support. That tends to be how our neighborhood outreach works. So.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions that Chad did not fair it out, and they were just thorough.
Just a quick one. The tenant, so for instance, if it's a tenant in a building who wants to do this, but he's not the building owner, who does he need the building owner's consent? Or is it
yes.
So it always needs a building owner's consent?
Yes.
And it has to be tenant-driven.
No.
And then are other area building owners notified of that?
Yes. And so that's a change this year. We really tried to step up the not only what we're asking the applicant to do in terms of their outreach and their discussion with the neighborhood, but also what PBOT's doing. So PBOT is posting a flyer in the window, and we are also doing a mailer to essentially, it's about a 200-foot radius. Mm.
So you could ostensibly, if you're a restaurant, you could ask for the parking spot in front of your restaurant and the one in front of your neighbor's building. So if the neighbor's saying,
no, we would need the property owner of both of those spaces to be
so,
okay.
And it's by property lines out into the parking.
Right.
District.
Just draw
right.
a straight line out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't ask for one across the street without that.
And generally what we are looking at, I mean, when PBOT grants truck loading zones or two-hour parking spaces, it is often in conjunction with its property owners. And so this is very much an extension of how PBOT works with the neighborhood about changing parking. And it's the same arguments we've used with on-street bike parking as well. There's always a balance. That's always my disclaimer. You know.
So. Have there been any safety issues? Any cars? I just get really kind of... Knowing that there are always DUIs and things, I just get a little nervous when I drive by them and I'm haven't even had a drop to drink. And I'm like, yeah, make sure I don't, you know, at least not much anyway.
No, there have not been any safety issues, nor have there been any safety issues in San Francisco. And they have something like 35, at least 35 on the ground.
Okay. Yeah.
Though we have to be on the cautious side, we're not allowing installations at corners because of the increased number of accidents at intersections. And we're trying to encourage vertical elements so that they're very visible. Of course, we also have to be careful of keeping sight lines clear for pedestrians that are coming out from behind it. It's not an issue. It's certainly something that's being talked about in the media, though. Right. I would say that is a number one fear of people.
Right.
So it's...
I guess the only other comment I would add, I think they're great. It was great just seeing how they were used when I was recently in San Francisco, is to just, if there's a way to not be so prescriptive that you're ruling things out. Because I think, there could be a temporary sculpture in one or something completely unrelated to how you think it could be potentially used.
Right.
And so it's walking a fine line between, what you're allowing in one particular instance, but I don't know. It's always going to be subjective what you're choosing to approve. And then whether things are permanent versus temporary. And it just seems, given our climate and just it rains so hard. I mean, I know there are permanent ones, but it just seems like they're probably going to be more temporary than not temporary. So what are you able to do with temporary materials that are still quality materials but aren't costing a fortune? And I know a lot of the ones that I saw in San Francisco were very permanent. That Audi one or the BMW one was just gorgeous.
Right.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, there's so many possibilities. How do you weigh and balance what you're approving? That's where the challenge is.
And really... I think trying to hold a bar in terms of the design quality that we want. And that's what we'll be struggling with as we work with applicants for next year and trying to decide which permits we approve this year.
So the BMW one, do they have roofs? I mean, is it?
No, it's just, it's like a steel ribbon sort of fence.
If you see it right there,
that's
on the left.
And
can you put a roof?
So it's, as long as it meets ADA guidelines, it's one of the issues that we're going to have to deal with because we have to be careful in terms of all the amenities that we allow. Exactly.
Right.
As well as trying to create something that can be usable and if there's a benefit for keeping them during the winter. So.
Do they need a building permit for this stuff?
No.
No.
If it's, but again, certain canopies may be held to structural engineering requirements.
Sure,
and
absolutely. Because then that gets back to Dad's liability issue.
Oh, certainly. With
it's in the right of way. You okayed it. Are you tacitly approving what gets built? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that we don't need to go through. But get away. Do you inspect these? Who inspects them? For just maintenance items, like is it starting to fall apart or is it? Paint peeling off of it,
I would say that is an absolute program. It's something that the program is looking at right now. 3 years into it, we're recognizing, okay, so how long, what's the lifespan of these?
Right.
The good thing and the key part of this program is that it's annual renewable permits, encroachment permits. So in order to be renewed, and so that's when the main site inspections happen.
So you inspect it to then approve it for another year.
Okay.
Very good.
Any other questions? Well, good luck, and hopefully you'll
and we'd
achieve
like
greater clarity
regularly.
We have a design commission.
Great, thank you. Thanks so much.